Safe Space, the ABA podcast, where we talk about all things ABA. My name is Michelle Zeman. I am your host. And today I am super excited to get into a very honest conversation about all things related to supervision. Please help me in welcoming Nicole Mark. She is a BCBA from Miami who supervises mentors and or mentees, and she also works with student analysts. Welcome to the podcast, Nicole.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I have listened to Safe Space ABA since I was a student, so it is such an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me, and I'm so excited to get into this topic. It is such a great topic, so super excited.
I love it. I love it. And thank you so much for being a loyal listener. You know, that really is so meaningful.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's dive right in. So you got a unique path in the field. You know, your mom was a special education teacher and you actually originally wanted to go into pediatrics. So tell me how that shifted and what led you to ABA.
So actually, when I was younger, I wanted to be a pediatric speech pathologist. I really wanted to be an SLP. I was really into the field of speech just because I was so excited to give individuals a voice and be an advocate for them. And my mom is a special education teacher, and growing up, I volunteered a whole bunch with her. I owe her everything. She got me into this field. She is the best human in this world. So volunteering with her, I saw a lot of SLPs, I saw a lot of RBTs, and what really shifted me over from speech to ABA is in speech, it's communication, language, speech, right? In ABA, it's so many different domains that we work on, and every day is so different. And to me, I just love that. I love that every day is different. Every kid is so different. You can work on such a wide range of things. And just ultimately, in speech, it's very specific. It's very focused. And I love that you are an expert in one thing. But in ABA, I love that you have the opportunity to be an expert in everything, to work with a wide variety of domains, social skills, communication, daily living, you know, self-advocacy, all of the domains of under the moon. So that's what really, really drew me over. But I mean, I still think speech is great. I think it's awesome. Speech, OT, PT, y'all rock. But I feel like in ABA, we have the opportunity to kind of dabble in everything, of course, with, you know, guidance and mentorship and collaboration, but we get to dabble in it all.
I love it. I love it. You know, and it's so great because you had that collaboration piece and you were still able to see that, you know, even when you were working in speech, you know, you were able to see RBTs in action too. Am I correct on that?
So I worked for a little while in a preschool. When I went over to Orlando, I was working in a preschool, and that's where I actually saw and asked about it, right? So I saw it in my mom's classroom, but I was really young. And it wasn't until I went to Orlando, I worked in a preschool there, and I started to see the interactions of RBTs and BCBAs up close. And I started asking questions. I saw a lot of things I liked. I saw a lot of things I didn't like. Some things I loved that I did see over there was that individualization of care. You see the RBTs right there with the kiddo during academic time, jumping in when needed and giving them the space to be themselves and just jumping in as needed. And that's something that I really like because it allows them to be 100% themselves, 100% independent. But it's like, I've got your back. If you need me, I'm right here, you know? But I did see a lot of things I didn't like back then either. I saw a lot of compliance training. I saw no flexibility in learning, right? It was very rigid way of thinking. Like, for example, when, where, and how to work. That's something we see a lot now of, you have to sit this way on this table, work with this pencil. And I saw a lot of that rigid style of thinking. And that's something I did not like. But yeah, I started asking the questions while I worked in that preschool. And then I did my RBT training, became an RBT, worked as an RBT for a couple years. And then I went to grad school and became a BCBA.
Nice. You know, and it's so great to hear like that you were questioning a lot of these like compliance driven practices that were happening, because even like some of us quote unquote old school BCBAs, you know, some of us got a lot more of that, like you have to follow through with the demand in place, and you know, assent wasn't a thing, and you know, like it's not something that was talked about. And so You know, I completely get that. Even like some of my supervisees that I have supervised before, I still remember one coming up to me and saying, "Before you, I never heard of the word ascent." It's like, it's shocking but and sad, but true.
So true. It is so true. I have had techs tell me numerous times, I've never allowed a child to like escape a table when they say like, I want a break, if there was a demand placed. For example, worksheet at the table, the kid is engaging in some precursor behavior. You see that they're getting upset, and I tell my techs, communication over compliance all day, every day. Prompt the break. I want to go. I'm all done. This is annoying. And allow them escape. And my techs will tell me, I've never done that before. I've always kept them at the table and made them draw that line, or made them trace the circle, or made them match the giraffe. And it's crazy that the way that the field is evolving. It's beautiful, honestly. I'm so glad that we are starting to wake up a little bit and see the change and see how effective we can still be, because I do think the root of it needs to be science. The root needs to be science, but we can still incorporate science in a more naturalistic teaching way and a more compassionate way as well.
Agreed. I could not agree more. I mean, honestly, you know, it goes to show you how much more evolved we're starting to be. Obviously, we have a very long way to go, but that being said, we're at least getting to a point where we're starting to understand the importance of that compassion, of that, you know, being more naturalistic and, you know, not forcing our kids to sit at a table just because we want them to sit at a table. Like, come on, the power struggles, guys. Like,
We got to do better.
yes, exactly. You know, now that you've stepped into a BCBA role, you know, tell us a little bit about how you've seen the field evolve, especially as you've gone into that BCBA role.
I still see a lot of that pattern from before the compliance training, but honestly, if I could just be very blunt with you, it's the BCBAs. We got to do better. We are responsible to do better because we know better now. So we need to do better now, you know? And I feel like I see it so often where the analysts come in, they open up their laptop, things are looking good. They're like, okay, peace out, bye. And we're not really looking at how our techs are implementing things. We're not really there during the escalated times. And it's really hard because then our techs don't feel supported. So for me, as an analyst, I've made very, very sure to be there with my techs during the tantrums, not just to kind of take over and fix the issue for them, but to mentor them through the de-escalation. And not only that, have procedures put in place for my techs to de-escalate, for my techs to feel comfortable enough to say, I need to tap out, or I'm not okay right now. I need a break. Same way we recognize, you know, that escalation in our clients and those precursors in our kiddos, we need to do the same for our techs and have a way for them to feel confident in speaking up and, you know, de-escalating themselves before they de-escalate a client. I see also now training. It goes back to the topic we're talking about today. RBT training, that is huge. Like, we are not training our techs. We are under the assumption that they have a 40-hour course and they're masters in ABA and they're ready to go be with a child who engages in SIB. And we don't train them. We don't take the time. We don't, you know, give them the resources they need to feel confident. So we're seeing a lack of this empathy. We're seeing these compliance-driven models because of lack of training. That's, I really feel that's the big issue here, lack of training.
Yeah, I definitely could not agree more when it comes to the lack of training. You know, some BCBAs are lazy. Let's be real here.
Yeah, honestly, it's a lot of effort to train. And as an analyst, like, here's the thing. As an RBT and a student, I never understood. I was like, why don't you want to train me? Like, I'm so hungry for it. I want to be a BCBA. Like, train me, train me. Now, as an analyst, I get it. And you know what? I can't blame the analyst entirely because the field we work in is a medical field, right? So we get reimbursed through insurance. So it's like the hours we work and the hours we bill are the only hours we're getting paid. So I'm sorry, but it's hard to expect a BCBA to sit there after hours and train an RBT. Or it's hard to put that expectation on a BCBA to stay after hours or to train a tech outside of their time they're able to bill. It's very hard. So companies need to do a little bit better too in giving us that time and allowing us to train, giving us, you know, more resources to have that time to train our techs and be intentional with our training. Because let's be for real, during our supervision sessions, sometimes we don't get to train. We're busy with the client, right? We don't get to take that individualized time to train the tech and bring them up to speed on what they need.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I think that when it comes to just that, you know, that need for training and that need for, you know, like I get that BCBAs are also overwhelmed. I know personally, I'm in a director position and I have quite a bit on my plate as a director. And it's like, you know, as much as I want to put so much more emphasis and love at the same time, it's like, how can I do that when I can barely put my head above water? I'm in the middle of 8 re-ops right now. And I'm like,
Yeah, I don't even have time to eat during the day. Like, it's so, have you seen that like TikTok where it's like cutting the iced coffee? That's me. Like, yes. That's my lunch. I'm like with my iced coffee cubes. If my text, it's the so funny. My student analyst, if you guys are watching this, you know, I have like 8 coffees a day and they're like, Nicole, I brought you lunch. And you know, you might think it's a taco. No. It's like a coffee. It's like a shot of colada or something. It's the funniest thing.
Oh my God. I cannot like, and it's so sad, but it's so true. And it's like, you know, but at the same time, we also have to remember these are people who are working directly with our clients. It's not like, you know, it's not just anybody. It's you are affecting my client's life, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a really big thing as well. And I love that you said that you are affecting my client's life. Like, if we just think about that for a moment, I think a trend nowadays that I'm seeing so often is that ABA is like the new, like being an RBT is the new cool thing, right? Like Everybody and their mom is an RBT. Like, that's for real. Everybody's an RBT. It's too easy to become an RBT. Requirements are slim to none. The training can be done in a week. It's very easy to be an RBT, and that leads to so many risks. So many risks. The fact that training is not being done seriously. And like you said, people don't understand the severity of the job or the title RBT, registered behavior technician. They're like, oh, I'm just an RBT. No, you're not just an RBT. You are changing the lives of children. You are changing the lives. You are giving somebody a voice to say, no, don't touch me like that. No, don't do that to me. No, I don't like that. Stop. Or, hey, I want to be your friend. Can I sit with you? Or, hey, I love this topic. Like, having those back and forth conversations. People just don't understand the impact that RBTs have and the work that they do. Because realistically, I know me, I give all the glory to my RBTs. My RBTs and my techs are the ones that do it all. I sit and I change my little prompting hierarchies and I rewrite protocols, but my techs do it all. My techs, they do it all.
Yeah, it's so true too. I mean, you know, I try to at least like say something to my technicians almost every single time I come. Thank you for what you're doing. You know, thank you for the work that you're putting into my client. And I don't always get the chance to like say that because I've got a million other things, but I do make an effort to at least try to say, I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate you being on the ground. I appreciate you showing up, you know, And that's really something that's so important. I feel like, you know, we have this mentality where it's like, yeah, we designed the plan. We have this beautiful plan and it meets the 7 dimensions of ABA and it's, you know, easy to break down, but without our RBTs implementing them, you know, like we're nothing.
No, we're absolutely nothing. You're 100% right. Like, and I think that's a big thing where us as analysts need to do better of that open collaboration with our RBTs. We need to get into supervision and close the laptop. We need to get on the floor with them, put the laptop down, take your notes later. But then you see it goes back to, oh, but I'm only able to bill an hour. Well, these companies need to do a little bit better on giving us some grace and giving us some, you know, a little leeway, an extra 30 minutes, allowing us to bill, right? Give us a non-billable rate that allows us to do our notes outside of session time because we were so invested in our client, because we are so invested in the quality of services that we're providing for them. But it's like we have a rigid system, rigid companies leading to rigid BCBAs, leading to rigid RBT training. So it's like the cycle continues. We just got to do better. Somebody needs to break the chain.
And isn't it ironic that we teach our kids not to be rigid? And yet we have rigid practices in place. What is that about?
What are, oh my goodness. It's the culture of laziness. We want money, but no work. That's the problem. BCBAs and companies lean on, well, they've passed their board exam. They have 40 hours out of laziness. We need to do better in investing, right? Investing in their staff. And BCBAs need to do better at checking their heart posture before stepping into the role of supervisor if you don't want to be a supervisor and you don't want to train.
Exactly. Check yourself. Exactly. Check yourself before you wreck yourself. I mean, it's a very true statement, you know. And when it comes to that too, it's just like, you know, you didn't become a BCBA just for an extra pay bump. And if you did, I'm sorry, you should leave the field.
That's you need to go.
Get out, because, you know, we are working with students, clients of all different ages, all different sizes, all different walks of life. For you to become a BCBA for what, just like a little bit of a pay increase, or for you to have some power, like that's not our field.
Yeah. And it shows. It really does show. It shows in your heart posture. It shows the way you work. And even, I mean, RBTs as well. Like, we see some that I'll have conversations, because I get to know my techs. I don't know about you, but I know my techs. Like, I genuinely know their background. I know about them. And when I talk to some, they're like, I can't wait to be a BCBA. Like, I can't wait to learn more. They're asking questions. They're super involved. And others are like, yeah, I'm going to law school. I'm like, well, what are you doing here? Like, go work at the county clerk office. Like, what are you? I don't know. And it's like, if this is not your field, if this is not your passion, if you don't love this, this is not for you. But we analysts, the companies, our field, need to do better at putting out more training and more information that's accessible, so people know what it is that they're going to be doing before they spend the money, before they invest their time and become RBTs.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. You know, I've noticed that a lot of companies get so worried about, oh, well, you need to bill so many hours and, you know, you're not meeting medical recommendation, medical necessity, whatever. And it's like, sweetie, I need to put more love into actually making sure that my techs know what they're doing first.
Like, don't even talk to me about billable hours, because I am seeing this trend of like, okay, my tech calls out, mind you, severe SIB, high impact. My tech calls out, oh, it's fine, let's just stick them with this new tech. New tech. What do you mean new tech? I already did my supervision this week. That means I can't be there to support this new tech. That means for this one day, I need to retrain her on protocol. Not her fault, but why don't we just cancel session for the day? Oh, because you want a bill. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get that. And that's just it too. Like, you know, we are expected to bill so much, and we're expected to put, you know, our supervision into the people that we're working with. But, you know, like you mentioned with the kid with the severe SIB, it's not something that you can just magically walk in and train, and, you know, because that's affecting your day too.
Yeah, not mine, but also the child. Like, forget my day. Yes. I'll train you 17 times if I need to. I will sit there until 1 o'clock in the morning training you. But true. My kid deserves better.
Oh,
that,
for sure.
That's the point. He deserves better. That client deserves better. They all deserve better, you know, so.
For sure. And like, I can understand if like the parents might feel like, oh, I can't believe that they canceled, you know. But it's like, would you rather, you know, your child be in a rough position by being placed with a substitute? And, you know, yeah, we might pair for the day, but what does pairing look like? And also, what happens if pairing happens, but then they still go into behaviors? Like, what are they supposed to do?
Yeah, I do understand. For me, it's more of the concept of putting in a tech with no training, because I get it, right? Parents have work. I give grace. I really give grace. Parents have work. They don't know what else, where are they going to put their kid for the day? That means the parent needs to take off work and lose a day of pay and all those things. But it's like, companies, if your tech calls out, put them with a tech at the, you know, with similar training, with similar experiences, with similar backgrounds, not with a brand new straight out of high school tech, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. This is what we're saying. We need to do better. We need to absolutely be better, do better, do all the things, you know. And we're not going to do it by just like placing this untrained person who, and it's not that we don't want to train. It's not that at all. In this case, like we obviously need to train, but you're just literally saying, hey, let's just put this little random Johnny with kid who is going to bash your face into the window. Like, that's not fair. That's not fair to the tech. That's not fair to the client. That's not fair to anybody.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Quality of care. Ugh, I
Quality
know.
of care and quality of life, you know,
We
because
need
I'm
them
just,
both.
yes, exactly. Well, I want to go ahead and drop our first code word of the episode, and that code word is the word accessible. That is ACCESSIBLE. That is the word accessible. I want to go back to a time though when you were a technician and you told me this story about the bite situation. Tell us a little bit about that situation and how that stood out to you.
The bite of food, is that what we're talking about?
Yes,
Okay.
that's the one.
So, okay, when I was a tech, it was my very first company I worked for. I had my very first kiddo and I was taught compliance training. Like that was the beginning of my training, being 100%. It was compliance over communication all day, every day. And this client wasn't a big fan of eating, right? Like good, real food. And parents were like, I want to work on eating. And so my BCBA was like, okay, we're going to call him Jimmy for HIPAA purposes. Hey, little Jimmy, it's time to eat, right? We're going to sit at the table. He had his Mickey Mouse on. And we're like, okay, Jimmy, take a bite of your food. We got to eat before we play. You know, we did the first then, we did antecedents, we did all the things, right? Little Jimmy was like, no, thanks. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to eat. Crying and crying and crying. 30 minutes passed. I'm like, okay, should we just like give them the apple slices? Can we give them something else? Nope, we're gonna follow through with this. I'm like, but why? Like, give them something else to eat. He doesn't want, I mean, if I don't want your salmon that you cooked, I'm gonna be like, no thanks. I'm gonna get McDonald's on my way home. And just not like, and I sat there with my BCBA and this client for 3 hours while this little Jimmy was screaming because he had to take one bite of food. It took us 3 hours for little Jimmy to take one bite of food, and we immediately gave him access to the room to play. It was 3 hours I sat there. 3 hours of me questioning, going back and forth with my analyst, why, like, you know, being told like, look, you're an RBT, you might not get it right now, you're a baby RBT, like this is extinction, like all the things. And in my head, even at that point in my training, I'm like, but there's other ways to do this. Why are we choosing this way? And so yeah, I will never forget about that. That completely stuck with me throughout my career, and that has impacted me so much now as an analyst when I teach my kids how to communicate and advocate for themselves, not just kids, but learners in general, how to advocate for themselves. The very first word, spoken language, verbal behavior, gesture that I teach them is the no. That's the very first one. Either shake your head, no, it could be a button and they hit no, it could be a peck, an AAC, very first word. Because it is so important to be able to protest something aversive to you, because you and I can do it. But what? Because we have control over this human right now during our controlled session in a controlled environment. We need to control what they eat or how they sit. Like the rigid thinking again. And yeah, it's that really stuck with me, and it hits home every single time I step into my clinic. Every single time I teach a tech and I train a tech, the first word I teach them is televisibility. Can somebody walk into your room and go like this and broadcast you right now? If the answer is no, check yourself, because you're being a little unethical and a little sticky right now. That's the first thing I teach my techs, because it's ugly out here. Like it's ugly. People are doing stuff behind, you know, the inside walls of a clinic, and it's like, are you okay with this being seen? No? Okay. We need to do some behavior modification on ourselves before we're trying to modify somebody else's, right? So yeah, that situation really impacted me. I asked so many questions after that, and being 100% truthful, after the situation, after talking to my analyst, we did come up with better strategies. Like the BCBA, this is not talking anything bad about my analyst. She was amazing. But we did brainstorm other strategies to get him to eat and give choices and choice opportunity and, you know, token systems and things like that. So we did reflect and we did do better following that situation. But that one day will never escape my mind. It hasn't left my mind in 3 years. And I don't think for the rest of my career, that moment will leave my mind ever. There are so many ways to teach a skill. We need to do better.
Wow. First of all, how amazing is it that, you know, you guys were able to go back, reflect, and, you know, kind of come to the conclusion of, we were literally just fighting with a kid for 3 hours to get him to take a bite of food. Yeah. Like, you know, the fact that you guys were able to do that is absolutely amazing, because there are some BCBAs who will stand by that and they will say, nope, you gotta do it. You gotta do it. Otherwise, you know, we are reinforcing the behavior, and it makes me sick to hear that, because it's like, how come we can't tell them, or how come we can't say no? How come we can't teach our kids no? By the way, teaching no is not only a fundamental right, it is a safety skill.
I don't think we understand that. I really don't.
Like, why? Oh, it bothers me so much. It really truly bothers me so much. I mean, it's ridiculous where it's like, you know, we are having to just do these power struggles, and for what?
That's what really gets me. It's the for what for me. Like, think about, what are we doing in ABA? And this is why it angers me, because ABA gets a bad rep because of these people we have representing our field. The power of our science is immense. The power we have to change behavior is huge. We need to put it in the right hands and do good with it, because we are doing harm. We are creating traumatic situations. That situation, that 3 hour situation, should have never happened. And we did that. And I pray to God that child does not remember that situation. And it just is like a blurb in their history and they forget about it, because that's horrible. And it haunts me to this day. We need to do better, because you and I, right? Like, what are we doing? What is the point of ABA, right? To teach socially significant behaviors, to incorporate an individual into the community without needing prompts or redirections, right? That's what we're doing here. So what does it matter where they sit or what they eat or what they use to color or like how long they're sitting? Isn't school supposed to teach, you know, the academic side of things? So what are we really doing? We need to check, is what I'm doing right now meaningful outside of these four walls, or am I just engaging in a power play? Because this isn't hockey. We got to do better. Like, we're not having no power plays. Like, come on.
I love the hockey analogy. And it's true. It's true too. I remember having to do this whole entire extinction procedure as well. And it was not quite like that situation. It was actually, so I had a therapist who was in the room and I was subbing for her because she had to go. And she said, hey, if she wouldn't comply with the word, say, and it was some word. And I was told that I had to basically continue with say blank, say blank. Say blank. I couldn't give her choices, couldn't do first then, couldn't do anything. I had to literally keep telling her say blank, because that's what the BCBA had wanted. And that's what was disseminated over to me. And of course, she's hitting me every time. And it's like, girl, I'd hit me too if I were you.
I was going to say, I'd throw a couple punches myself.
Yeah. And it was awful. And thank God that a different BCBA stepped in and saw this happening. And I'm looking at them and I'm like, this has been the case for over an hour and it's been with two people now. It's not even been with just me. It's been with the other therapist too. And she walked in and she ended up using PREMAC and she ended up saying, okay, like, what are you wanting to do? Like, assessing motivation, which, by the way, we need to do throughout our entire day, no matter what. And finally, she did say the word, but it took having to just do a couple of small changes in our own behavior in order to do that. And it's like, and it's so frustrating because there are some BCBAs who really do hold on to this. You have to follow through with the demand. If you don't do it, you are reinforcing this maladaptive behavior. And I, to this day, like, it disgusts me. It makes me sick. It's like, you're not teaching our students to advocate for themselves. You're teaching them that they must comply with you, and that can lead to unsafe and vulnerable situations.
Absolutely. You could not have said it better. Like, that it's wild. And you know what that boils down to, though? Training. Because yep. Everything that you just said right now relates to the tech, the BCBA, the BT, RBT, whatever paraprofessional, teacher, parent, changing their behavior. Why are we not training our techs on antecedent manipulation or the power of consequences reinforcement? Yes, extinction is a real thing. We need to put behaviors on extinction, but we need to be pairing that extinction with differential reinforcement. We need to be using our DRA, DRI, DRO, like DRH, DRL. We got to be bringing these in. There's so many things that we can incorporate into our session. But again, it's training. It's laziness. It's, hey, you got to keep this girl here until she says, say, water bottle and no leaving. Why can't you prompt, hey, do you need a break? Do you want more time with the iPad? Why can't we prompt something different? Prompt the escape. That's the function of her aggression, probably, to escape or delay.
Exactly. Exactly that. Escape to leave the situation. She wanted to go eat lunch. It's like, I don't blame you.
So why are we not teaching that skill? What's more, that's what I train my techs. This is what I train my techs. I ask them in that moment, what is more important? For her to say water, or for her to ask you to go eat because she's hungry, because that MO is present. What's more important, for her to say, can I please take a break? I'm pissed. Or is it to get her to say water? What is more important in that moment? What is going to have a bigger impact on her life? What is going to make her a more confident individual and have more self-advocacy skills? Think about it in that moment. Check yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, now that you're a BCBA, if you could go back to that baby RBT, what would you tell her?
Oof. To myself, I would honestly say, first, give yourself some grace, right? Because this is all you know.
Yeah.
But ask multiple BCBAs, get different perspectives. If your heart feels icky, if you feel like you have, you know, if you feel weird about a situation, speak up about it. Don't ever feel like you are just an RBT, because you're not just an RBT. See, if you see something, say something. And do your research. Ask for training. If you step into a session and you're not feeling confident and you see these behaviors, ask for more training. Demand more training. When I became a BT, because I was a BT before I got certified and became an RBT, they wanted me to train for a week before giving me a client. I said, a week? You've got to be kidding me. No way. I'm like, I need a month at least. Like, I'm about to be in charge of a child, of somebody's baby. Imagine if it was mine. So demand your training. You feel a little nervous, and it's okay to be nervous. It's okay to ask for training. That doesn't make you less of a tech. It makes you a better one. It means that you are willing to learn. It means that you are going to be more confident in the long run for it, because you spoke up, you asked for help, and get different perspectives. But ultimately, I would give that RBT a hug, because she probably needed a hug not to go sign up for a master's degree in that moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I would do the same thing with my baby BT self. You know, in that moment, I did not know better. I was constantly told escape extinction was like the buzzword at my clinic.
That was the thing. Oh, my goodness. That's the same here. That was the thing. No escape extinction. Ooh, if you allowed your child to escape, you were gone. No, not gone. No, not for real. But it was like frowned upon. Do not ever let a child escape. And the planned ignoring. Don't even get me into planned ignoring, because I could be here for another hour with you. But
very bad. Yeah.
But that's training, though, because look, as we've evolved, as we've grown, I saw different perspectives, but look, that came from my training. That came from having to leave company after company because they were not meeting my needs as a supervisee. So I went and looked for somebody else to train me. And I think that's another thing that I would tell my RBT, my little baby BT self, leave. If you don't feel trained, leave.
Yeah. If you don't feel trained, and if you don't feel empowered enough to say something, because one of the other things that I've noticed across companies, I've probably been employed at probably upwards of 10 different ABA companies in my career as both a BT and a BCBA, if you do not feel safe enough to say something, because there's this toxic level of upper leadership, upper management, get out. You deserve so much better.
Yeah, that is 100% true. And it's so sad. I heard that from a tech when I first became a BCBA. And she came up to me and she was like, you are the first analyst that I can say something to that I don't like, that is going to hear me, reevaluate the situation with me, and come up with a solution with me. Not for me, but with me, because you heard me. And my heart broke for her, because I'm like, there's no way. Like, you've been a tech for 6 years. There's no way nobody's ever heard you out like this. But it happens. It really does. And it's sad. It's sad because we're losing valuable techs. The turnover rate is crazy. We're seeing mishandling of children. Like, it's crazy out here. And it comes from a lack of support.
Yeah, that's exactly why we have as much turnover in this field as we do, is because of lack of training and lack of support.
Yeah, we need more training. Like, we need to have better systems put in place. And it cannot be a 40-hour training. Or, you know what, fine. If the board wants to have a 40-hour training, by all means, have your 40-hour training, have your competency, have your exam. But companies, we need to have a hands-on training system. Why are we taking these techs and we're like, okay, you're certified? You got your Medicaid ID? All right, game time. No, what are we doing? Like, let's give them a little recap. Let's invest some time into having a training coordinator. And for the first 2 weeks, have them do modules and then go and have checkpoints and model the behavior with a live client, with different live clients. Let's use ABA principles. Let's generalize their skills across clients in different settings. Let's have them shadow in home. Let's have them shadow in the clinic. Let's have them shadow in school. Oh, but nope, because it's too expensive.
Okay. It's too expensive, and it's out-of-pocket expenses.
It's out-of-pocket. You can't bill for it. You can't bill to train an RBT properly. And you can't bill for the BCBA to be the trainer, so the BCBA is mad that she's not getting paid. It's a vicious cycle. Like, we need better training. And I'm so, you know, I'm very glad that in the company that I work for currently, they are great listeners. They listen, right? And every company has their thing, but they listen. When change is needed, they do listen. And that's something that I really value, because it's important to listen to your staff. And if, you know, there's not enough training, they're like, okay, let's make it happen. So little by little, it's like we're getting somewhere. But a lot of companies are like, nope, go somewhere else then. You're replaceable. And it sucks, because techs are not replaceable like that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Unfortunately, we are replaceable, like, in the sense of, you can put another body in my position.
I was going to say, you can absolutely put another body, right? But the grass isn't greener on the other side. It's green where you water it. Exactly. You can grow and mold a tech by pouring into their cup. You pour into a tech, they're going to pour into your company. Like, pour into me and I will pour into you, but I need to feel valued. I need to feel respected. I need to feel heard and empowered. So yeah, training, everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and it makes me that much more sad, because, you know, the requirements to become an RBT is so minimal. You literally need that 40-hour training. You have to pass a competency. You have to pass a test, and then boom, you're an RBT. But the truth of the matter is, you don't have the skills. You did a training, congratulations. You shadowed some clients maybe, or if you didn't, I've seen it where it's been just modules, and, you know, they might do some role play and rehearsal and feedback and all the things in BST, but where's the skills? Where's the experience coming in?
Yeah, no, it's hard. And I understand the intention behind, like, the accessibility to enter the field, right? It, more than likely, it's so easy to be an RBT because we need people. We need, you know, there's a big demand for what we do, right? So I get the intention behind the accessible entry, but it's caused a lot of unintended consequences that are affecting both our clients, our providers, and the families that we work with. Like, we need to check ourselves in the sense of our expectations versus the reality. They do a 40-hour course, and then they enter the field expected to deliver a behavior intervention plan. The RBTs are underprepared. It's leading to burnout. They they don't feel supported. Turnover is insane and inconsistency across our treatment fidelity. So yeah, that's why people are saying ABA doesn't work, because it's not working. We don't have a tech long enough for it to work, right? We're not able to build on these skills and generalize across different techs in the office or different people in the school, because we don't have a tech. The techs are like this in and out because we're not training them. It's super, super high turnover rate. It's craziness. And the client safety and client dignity is being compromised. Like it's hard. It's hard. RBTs are accidentally reinforcing behavior, like dangerous behaviors. It's very escalated situations are happening because of lack of training. Like I said, high turnover rates. There's a low barrier to enter the field. That means that everyone views the role as like a short-term job rather than a profession, rather than a career. People see RBT as like, oh, it's quick, I can get into it fast. And they don't see it as like, this is real deal. Like you're doing some big stuff. And the little bit of requirements it takes can lead us or outside people to have this perception of an RBT as an entry-level role when you need to know a lot of things. Like, I don't know about you, please jump in and share, but I don't see an RBT as entry level or assistant or anything like that. The clinical importance that these people have is wild. The power they have.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think part of that kind of goes to interviewing in a way too. You know, like I've seen it in some interviews where it's like, well, I saw this job and it said the word technician, and you know, I just thought, why not? You know, it's like the truth of the matter is that this is not just an entry. This, first of all, this is not entry level at all. Are you kidding me? There's science involved. There is behavior. There's lives. Like we're working with humans to work on changing and shaping behaviors so that way they can be as independent and live the life that they want to live. You know, for this isn't like a cashier job at a local McDonald's, you know, where all you have to do is just type in, you know, some numbers on a register and, you know, put money in, you know, give debit cards and all that. No, you are working with little humans, little or big humans, on a variety of skills to help their lives change for the better.
Yeah. And a lot of them too have severe behaviors or maladaptive behaviors, right? And as an RBT, you are bridging the gap between skill deficit and maladaptive behavior, because chances are they're engaging in this behavior because they lack this skill. So you are bridging that. You are giving them the skill so they no longer need to engage in this behavior to access their wants and needs. We need to think about that for a second and just ponder on it and think, where's my heart entering this field?
So. Yeah, exactly. You know, and I know one thing that as a student analyst, you developed a really big passion for mentorship, you know, because of these issues. So tell us what kind of sparked that and what you think that a real mentor should do. What does that look like?
Okay, so first part of your question was what sparked that? Lila. One of my BCBAs, her name was Lila. Well, not was, she's alive. Is Lila. She actually has a podcast of her own. She's one of like the Scrunchy Moms podcast. She was my analyst and she showed me what a true mentor is. She would sit with me and explain why she's programming the way she's programming. Why is she picking these goals? I would say, okay, we're matching, but why? Doesn't he match at school? And she would explain to me, no, but we're working on hand-eye coordination because in a couple of years or weeks, or we want him to get an AAC. Like she would explain to me the why. Let me be involved in treatment planning and things like that. And she just really sparked that like, wow, I feel involved. And when I became an RBT, I wasn't 100% set on being a BCBA yet. I knew I wanted to be an RBT, but I didn't know I wanted to take it a step further and continue my education. She sold me. Signed, sealed, delivered. I was like signing up right now. I signed up for my master's with her. Like, so she definitely sparked that for me. And I thank God for her every day because she really made me feel heard. She made me feel, she set the fire under my booty for me of our field of ABA. And real mentorship, what I think real mentorship is not to give you a mouthful of the science, because let's be honest, we all go to school, right? We do our 40-hour training, or if you're becoming a BCBA, you go to through a master's program, but giving you the hands-on, showing you, like, learn through seeing, doing it with them, right? Not me sitting behind a computer screen and yapping to you for an hour or 2 hours or however long our supervision is, but explaining to you why I'm doing it, modeling these things for you, asking you if you have any questions, doing the real BST model, right? The explaining part, the modeling, providing them with feedback. And we're not doing enough of that. We're just kind of letting them go and giving them constructive criticism and making them all feel like garbage. But yeah, real mentorship, hands-on, individualized mentorship, not just one size fits all. Not all my techs operate the same. The individualized part. Hey, how do you like your feedback? How can I do better to support you as a tech? Not you need to do better to, you know, handle me as a BCBA. How can I do better to support you as my tech? Because you do so much, you know, and I do so little. You do so much. That individualization, not of care just for our clients, but for our techs. We need more individualized care for our techs. Time investment, being available for them, right? Like investing, like I said, pour into your techs and they're going to pour out to you. I make sure that I ask my techs, hey, if you have questions, text me. I will respond to you. We will set a meeting. Like, let's meet and chat about it. I want to meet and chat about it. Yes, it's going to take an hour of my unpaid time, but it's going to give her an hour back of her session when she doesn't have to be an hour in a tantrum feeling not competent or not confident in her role. And just being around for them. Show up for your supervisions, BCBAs out there. Show up. Be there. Because we like to supervise our 5%. 5% is not industry standard. Industry standard is 10 to 20%. Like, show up for your techs, you know? 5% is not enough for a person that only had 40 hours of training. They need more love and care, just like our babies do, you know?
Exactly, exactly. And if any BCBA or any analyst at all is listening to this and thinking, oh, well, you know, they have to fit my mold and they have to meet my standards, I'm sorry, but no, I don't want you to be my BCBA and I don't want to work with you. And that sounds very uncollaborative of me. However, I would rather not work with you than work with someone who is brand new and wants more experience, wants more perspectives. You know, you can't be in that mentality of it's my way or the highway. Like, you can't. My goodness.
It's gross. It's like, what is our main goal here? For you to win this power play or for the child to access the education they deserve from us, to access us as a resource? What's more important? Our collaboration between tech and BCBA so the child can have a better session, or the tech just abiding by your rules because you're BCBA, because you got a cool four little badge on? Like, 100%. You said it perfectly.
You know, and it's interesting too, because I will never forget one of my very first BCBA supervisor jobs. I remember there was an admin person who was doing our like admin onboarding. And she said, and I quote, as a technician, you should not question the BCBA. And I'm so glad that you made the face that you made, because she opened her mouth for reference, everybody. But the reason why I'm so glad that you made that face is because I made that same face, and I didn't like outwardly do it because I was right in front of her. But all I could think is, please practice philosophical doubt with me. Please question me. Like,
God, you said some philosophical doubt. Y'all, if you guys don't know what philosophical doubt means, it is we question everything. Not everything we say or do is 100% true. We need to question and repeat. This is how science evolves. We also need to check what people say. Like, question me.
Just because you got four or five letters after your name does not mean you're always right, guys. Come on.
No. And the techs spend so much time with the clients. Like, the techs spend way more time with the learner than we do. So why are we not valuing their opinion more? Why are we not asking more questions? Like, my techs are incredibly involved in the treatment plan process. And you must be thinking, oh, well, you're a BCBA. Why didn't you need your techs? Arrest me. My techs know so much about my clients. they have such valuable information. They see things that I don't get to see when I'm not there. I rely on data and little black bullet points, little, you know, dots and lines on a screen. They're the ones that see and are able to see the ABC live in front of them. And it's we need to put more effort into our texts.
We need to put more love. We need to put more emphasis. I mean, it's so interesting because even like I've been told by like a parent, for example, I remember being in their house and talking about toilet training and the parent goes, well, you're the expert on this. And I'm like, but you're the expert on your child. And my technician is more of an expert than I am on your child. You know, I may know about behaviors, but you know your kid. And my tech knows your kid just as much. I wouldn't say just as much, but my tech knows your kid well too. I'm just here for 20% of the hours per week.
Yep.
That's not a whole lot.
Wow. No, that's crazy. That reminds me of a time a parent like in front of my tech was the tech gave a suggestion and the mom like overlooked the tech, like looked over her, looked over at me and was like, well, what do you think? Because you're the BCBA and they're just the tech. I said, well, just we're just the tech. What do you mean just the tech? My job is to just make words sound fancy, saying differential reinforcement and extinction escape maintain. But like, but they're the ones that are on their hands and knees with your child. How can you just blatantly look over them that way? But again, it goes back to making sure our techs are trained and our techs are competent. We need to pour into them. We need to have more hands-on training. Our interview process, not interview, but our onboarding process needs to be longer. We cannot just keep pretending like we're an In-N-Out burger service. It's like, get them in, get them out. What are we doing? We need to invest into our people so they stay longer. That leads us to better quality of care, safer care, right? The parents and the families get to build stronger relationships with the techs. They're more trusting of them, which leads them to be more willing to be open and sharing with our techs and with our BCBAs, the families being more encouraged to join into sessions, leading to better outcomes of our care and generalization of skills and treatment fidelity across the board. Like, I can go down a whole list of reasons why we need better training. It just takes who's going to do it. Like, who's going to do it? And that's why for me, like starting being a BCBA was so important that I started my platform and I started training and I started being a reliable mentor and a resource. Like, ask me a question and I'm here to answer it for you. We don't need to hop on a $30 consult call for you to ask me a question about your training, for you to make me, for me to make you feel a little bit more confident in your role. Like, it's so important that we be a little bit more open to our techs, you know, as analysts.
Exactly. I could not agree more. And on the note of mentorship, I'm going to drop the second code word of this episode. And that word happens to be the word mentorship. That is M-E-N-T-O-R-S-H-I-P. That is mentorship. Well, now to wrap up, let's say, I'm just going to throw a scenario in your direction. Let's say you walk into a company and you see that, you know, the RBT, an onboarding process really isn't that great. And that unfortunately is common on our field. But let's just say you walk in and, you know, you're seeing that there's a lot of flaws. What would you do? And how would you change that?
Oof, I love this question. Well, first and foremost, I've had this thought up in my mind for so long. There would be a pre-service training and an in-service training, right? Besides your 40-hour training, and 40-hour trainings would be more hands-on. It would be more than just this is positive reinforcement. No. It would be like positive reinforcement, bullet point definition, a video on what positive reinforcement looks like in action, in context. And then here, demonstrate it for me right then and there. Keeping it fun, keeping it interactive, not just a computer screen the whole time with just information thrown at you. Visuals are so important. We use them with our learners, use them during our trainings, right? So a much better 40-hour curriculum where it's more hands-on, maybe something interactive, things like, I know there's like boom cards and stuff that we use with our clients, the same concept with our trainees, right? With our RBTs, something that they can, what is it called? A simulator. That's what I was trying to get at. A little simulation, something like that. Then, you know, a checklist, like, okay, you just learned about, let's stick with positive reinforcement. You just learned positive reinforcement. Let's go into the clinic after doing their background check and all that stuff. Let's go into the clinic and I want you to see somebody do it and then I want you to do it. And as they go through their training, they get to see, they get to do, they get to feel more confident. Not only are you teaching them the science, but you're teaching them the practical hands-on part of things. I also would include some ACT in there, mindfulness training, debriefing procedures, more about pairing, because we don't talk about pairing enough in our 40-hour training, how important it is to pair with the client at the beginning of their session and get to know them, know their reinforcers, know their preferences. And then the in-service training, different techs, different clients of different skill acquisition, of different impact. And again, having like a task list almost for the hands-on training part, where it's like, okay, I saw functional communication training. I did functional communication training. Now I've mastered it, right? And then you go on to the next one and you're like, okay, I want to look at stimulus fading is next. Now I'm going to see stimulus fading. Now I'm going to do stimulus fading, and have these analysts check off on them, or the training coordinator or whoever, check off on these things. And then once they start in the role, we would be doing constant IOA checks, RBT fidelity, treatment fidelity checks, checking in with them, having surveys to evaluate the effectiveness of their supervision, the quality of the care that they're receiving, not just the quality of care that they're giving. My list goes on and on. I could just yap about what I would change forever, but that's just the basics, like more hands-on, quality assurance checks, making sure that they're feeling a little bit more confident in their role. And hearing feedback. I think we do a lot of talking and we don't do a lot of asking. And I think that's what needs to kind of shift when we are starting to train our BTs. How do you feel? Do you understand this? How can I explain this better for you? You know?
How can I do better by you?
How can I do better by you? How can I be a better supervisor for you? Or how can I be a better admin position for you? So,
yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think it's so spot on, and, you know, it really does take, you know, we talk about it takes a village to raise a child in the realm of our clients, right? It also takes a village to raise our technicians. Yeah. And it takes that love and it takes that time, you know? So to end on this, what's your message to companies about training?
I think my message to companies is stop treating people like they're replaceable. The grass is not greener on the other side. It's green where we water it and we pour into it. And the more we pour into our beautiful grass, the more it will bloom. And the more these techs will, you know, give quality care. But also to the companies out there, let's be honest. You want billable hours? Treat your techs right and they're going to continue to bring in those billable hours for you. That's it.
Boom. I love it. I love it. Nicole, you've been such a fun guest to talk to. I absolutely loved our conversation today. Where can our listeners contact you or find you?
I am Behavior Mastered on Instagram, on TikTok. Gmail is behaviormastered with an ED at the end at gmail.com. So yeah, I would love to collaborate. If any RBTs have any questions, need help, need training, I'm here. I host monthly RBT trainings, again, completely free, just to be a resource out there. So if you're a listener that needs some training, listen up. And again, to all my students, Safe Space ABA is the place to be. Please, I give you guys to all my students. They're all on your podcast. My students are already writing down all the code words. They're like, as soon as I become a VCPA, I'm going to get these CEUs. I'm like, oh my goodness.
You know, that gives me so many ideas.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that. Oh my goodness. Well, thank you again, Nicole. I really appreciate your time. And thank you everybody for tuning in and listening. I've been your host, Michelle Zeman, and I will see you on the next one. Bye guys.